Hi, Brian.
Hi, Katie.
And hello, everyone out there in podcast land. So, Brian, guess how I started my morning?
The usual, Pilates and a high colonic.
No, and I didn't take an Instagram picture of my breakfast smoothie. I'm obsessed with stories, though, but I decided to change it up today. So I hopped out of bed and jumped into an ice-cold plunge pool.
I find that a little hard to believe.
I'm a different woman altogether. Actually, I didn't do this, listeners. But you know who does jump into ice-cold water every single morning?
Well, he told us, our guest, Tony Robbins.
That's right. He starts every day with a literal splash. It's part of his strict morning routine, and he swears by it.
Yeah, I'm not so surprised. I mean, Tony, if I'm a man, Tony is like 10 times a man. He's a Superman, and he's also kind of what I'd call a force of nature.
He's certainly a go, go, go kind of guy for sure. Not only is he a best-selling author, motivational speaker, entrepreneur, and philanthropist,
he's also coached CEOs, celebrities like Richard Branson and Serena Williams, and even presidents of the United States.
In fact, in our conversation with Tony, we talk about his work with President Clinton at the height of his impeachment scandal.
As a reminder, this month we're on a little summer break, so we're revisiting some of our favorite conversations from the podcast vaults, very heavily guarded vaults. Anyway, our conversation with Tony was one of our most popular episodes ever.
And I'm really not surprised because he's a captivating speaker. People flock by the thousands and thousands to listen to his seminars.
By the way, Tony is a very enthusiastic guy. So if you hear a sound, you're not crazy. Those are Tony's hands slamming the table for emphasis with the force that I couldn't muster if I tried.
And those are some big hands that Tony Robbins has. But that's another subject.
Wow.
To kick things off.
Well, you went there.
I asked Tony to describe himself in his own words.
I'm a peak performance coach. I'm a consultant for people, but you know, I'm also an entrepreneur and a philanthropist. You know, a big part of my life today is besides helping people in events and things of that nature, I have 31 companies. So they're in very different industries. You know, I'm everything from, I have the unique opportunity to do some of the best stem cell work in the world, while simultaneously we've got virtual reality, the exclusive with the NBA. So, you know, you see Monday Night Football, we're having Tuesday Night NBA. We have the exclusive with Live Nation. So I have about 1,200 employees across four continents. We do $5 billion in sales each year. And then I have my day job, which is about 75% of my time because I love it so much, which is helping people improve their lives. And then philanthropy-wise, you know, I'm feeding 100 million people a year now. I've done that for 2 years in a row. I'm going to feed 1 billion people over the next 8 years. And it's not because I'm such a good guy. It's just when I was 11 years old, we had no money and no food on Thanksgiving. And a man came to the door and delivered food. And my father did not respond well to it, but I did. My dad always said, strangers don't care. And I think the biggest impact for me was not just that there was food, but the fact that I had evidence that strangers cared about my family, and it shifted me to really care about strangers. So I promised myself I'd feed people. When I got to 17, I fed two families, and the next year, four, and eventually got to 1 million, 2 million. And I fed 4 million people a year for about 8 years, and then 2 million myself and 2 million through my foundation. So I thought, I fed 42 million in a lifetime. What if I had 50 million this year? And then I got excited, made it 100 million, and I got Feeding America to be my partner, and they deliver. I mean, their efficiency is amazing.
Jeez.
So we've partnered. So we're going to feed 1 billion people, and then the numbers we're getting should provide an ongoing 100 million new meals per year, ongoing from there on.
Can I just say, I give up. I feel so lazy and useless after just hearing that
answer.
What are
you talking about? A lifetime of helping people.
I think
people.
We should just, you know.
You've had a lifetime of helping people.
Not
what are you talking
really,
about?
But
yes,
wow,
you have.
This is really impressive.
Now, you talked about growing up in a tough environment, and you did. Your dad left, as I understand, when you were very young.
I actually had four fathers, so yes, they all left.
Your mom was quite abusive. In fact, you left home when you were 17, when your mom came after you with a knife. Can you describe how that upbringing kind of shaped the man you've become since then?
I never talked about my mom when she's alive. I didn't, you know, I still love her to this day. If she'd been the mother that I wanted her to be, I wouldn't be the man I'm proud to be. Because the fact that I suffered so much, I mean, she was addicted to, you know, prescription drugs and alcohol, and the mix is not a good mix. And she got very violent, and I have a younger brother and younger sister, 5 and 7 years younger. So for me, I had to become a practical psychologist just to figure out how to keep her in control, not hurt them, much less hurt me. And so I really, really grew as a result of that. I mean, I've suffered so much that I don't want to see any human suffer. And I became obsessed with finding answers to how to help people end their suffering, how to have them have the beauty that they want for their life. And it just turned into a 40-year enterprise, you know, and I've had the privilege of living in a time where, you know, I go to 12, 13 countries a year. I see 1/4 million people live. I mean, you couldn't have done that, you know, 50 years ago.
But Tony, you know, I think that kind of childhood experience would have destroyed so many people. What was it about you and about sort of your psyche, your constitution, your outlook on life that you were able to turn it into something so positive? I'm sure you've examined that.
I have. I think that what saved me was reading. I early in my life, I got exposed to personal improvement and personal development, and I took a speed reading class, and I promised myself I'd read a book a day. I didn't do that, but I read 700 books in 7 years, and they were all psychology, physiology, anything that could improve the quality of life. And so because I was feeding my mind so much, I think that really gave it. The other part was I just love people. And so, you know, I love my brother and sister to start with. I just want to help them. But by the time I was in high school, I had so many answers. I was Mr. Solution. You had a problem, I had the solution. Especially if you're a girl, I was highly motivated to help you get over that stupid boy in your life.
I'm sure you were.
Now, I have such strong memories as a kid watching your infomercials on TV. Yeah. That's how I first got introduced to you.
That's Brian's way of reminding us how young he is.
I'm not so young. I'm practically middle-aged now. But
practically.
but the point is, I think a lot of people who may have gotten introduced to you that way don't know that you've become this advisor to CEOs like Mark Benioff and Paul Tudor Jones, that you've advised Richard Branson, Steve Wynn, Serena Williams, Pat Riley, on and on.
Yeah.
How has your career kind of gone from, you know, TV self-improvement guru to advisor to the CEO stars?
Well, I was always, even early in my life, quite frankly, I was a young kid, but I had unique insights because I'd loaded my brain. You know, I'd gone for so many answers that I had them. I didn't have all the life experience yet, but I had this incredible passion to help people. And so it allowed me at an early age, I was turning around, you know, when I was, gosh, how old was I? I was 20, let's see, I'll be 18, 19, you know, 19, 20 years old. I was turning around Olympic athletes. 24, I turned around Andre Agassi when he'd been number one and dropped to 29 and got him back to number one. And he gave me enormous credit, maybe too much, maybe not, but I helped him turn around.
Either way, you're grateful.
Yeah, either way, I'm grateful. And then, you know, when I got to the President Clinton at that stage and Mother Teresa and Nelson Mandela, the game changed.
Name dropper.
Yeah, no, I am name dropping because they were just such
incredible,
incredible human beings that I got the privilege to coach. I was pinching myself, but I also wasn't stupid enough to only coach them. I was learning from them. So for 40 years, I've not just been coaching others thinking I got all the answers. I've been sucking the juice out of the brains of the smartest people I can find and the most heartfelt people I could find, doing the same thing I did with the financial. You know, I said, if I want to really, I've taught this for years, but I was so angry what happened in 2008 and that no one paid a price for it, that by 2010, I said, I got to use my skill. I have this unique gift. I've coached Paul Tudor Jones for, at that point, I think 20 years. It's been 24 years now.
He's one of the leading investment managers in this country.
He went to UVA with me, and I asked him after many years after we graduated, hey, Paul, where were you when I was at UVA thinking, you know, that would have been a nice person to hook up with, if you know what I'm saying? And he said to me, yeah, I was probably drunk. And I said, no wonder we didn't meet. But anyway, continue.
Well, Paul, as you know, is a gift to this country and a gift to this city for sure with Robin Hood and all that he's done. And I've learned so much from him. But that's really what I've tried to do along the way, is I've tried to learn by other people's experiences because, you know, in business, other people's money is leverage. I think what's much more valuable than other people's money is other people's experience when that other person's experience is dynamic and extraordinary. You
that's
know?
Wild. So really in helping them, they're helping you.
Without
it's kind
doubt.
Of
I tell
a
them
win-win.
All the time. They all talk about Tony changed my life, saved my life. You know, you bring Mark Benioff, some of my dearest friends, and I can remember Mark coming up to me after attending 3 seminars in a row. He's hard to miss. He's standing in the front row. He's as big as I am, right? He comes up and shakes my hand. He goes, this is my 3rd seminar. I said, yeah, I know. He goes, you just convinced me. You finally pushed me over the edge. You know, he says, I'm leaving my job and I'm going to start this new company called Salesforce.com. And we're going to change the business world. And you're going to remember and you're going to come on the journey with me. And he goes, I'll never forget. He looked at me. He goes, mark my words. We're going to do $100 million in business. Of course, he's going to do $10 billion this year, right? So it's been a fun journey to see those things. But he says, this is my favorite quote because it certainly serves me. He goes around and tells everybody, Salesforce wouldn't exist if it wasn't for Tony Robbins. That's bullshit, but I really like that he says it.
But I think what people may have trouble understanding is, you know, you're sitting down with President Bill Clinton during the height or the depths of the Lewinsky scandal.
Yes.
And he's looking to you for advice. What can you tell him that he doesn't already know?
The truth. I was with Peter Guber. I don't know if you know Peter owns the Dodgers and the Golden State Warriors.
Didn't
and a dear friend
of mine.
Didn't
he used to be married to Barbara Streisand?
No, but his partner dated
John
her.
John Peters. Yeah,
John
oh,
Peters.
Sorry. Okay,
yeah.
Sorry.
Confused the two. We don't want to spread that rumor. Okay. He could get in trouble as well. But I was at Peter's house. I was used to spend every Christmas with him in Aspen. And he calls me and says, the president's on the line. I said, what? So I got on the line. The president said, you know, I've had 10 people tell me that right now I'm going through a tough time. You're the right guy. Would you come to Camp David and spend the weekend and talk with me? And I said, I can't come for the weekend. I come for the day. It's a holiday. I've got to be with my family. But I said, I just want you to know I'm not a fan. And Peter, I'll never get Peter's face. I said, I'm completely respectful. It would be a privilege to serve you. But if you're looking for someone who's going to tell you want to hear, I'm the wrong guy. And there's this long pause. And then President Clinton said, I like that. I'm looking for something. I'm not looking to be told what I believe. I said, great. Then I'm happy to come. And I hung up the phone and Peter said, you just told the president of the United States you're not his fan. I have to invite you to come. What the hell's the matter with you? So I went and met the president and developed a real great friendship. But I can remember after the blue dress, we were in Aspen together and going down the Red Mountain, if you know that area, you know, and it's snowy and it's surreal. You know, the president's motorcade in the middle of the night going down this icy mountaintop. And he said to me, he said, you know, God, I'd run again if I could. And I was like, dude, if I were you, I'd get the hell out of Dodge. You know, I was teasing him. And he goes, no, Tony, what am I going to do with the rest of my life? I'm 50 or 51, whatever he was at the time. And it's kind of crazy now because I just saw him last weekend. And just to see what he's done with his life, I know he's obviously massively disappointed with what happened in the election, but to see what he's done out of office is truly inspiring. It's inspiring that you can't imagine. But to address what you've said, I was 31 and I'm advising the president of the United States. It's kind of trippy. I'm, you know, a deer went running by. It's in the middle of the snow and the president's telling me how bad the media is. It's so funny. You know, so you can tell me at that time that they don't listen. And, you know, he's the first president that doesn't have an external enemy. So now everybody's turning internally was his view. And I remember thinking, this guy's president of the United States and he's whining. And it's like, I guess we all whine at times and I got to figure out what to do to help this man. And
so what did
start
you,
a long-term
you,
relationship. Well, I don't talk about what I do with people unless they talk about it publicly. So the thing I can tell you is one day, one of the more interesting calls I got, he called me one day, I was at my office, people page me, and I get on the phone, and he says, they're going to impeach me in the morning. What should I do? And I'm like, first, could you have called me sooner? Just tomorrow morning, right? And I said, that's the wrong question. And the question you got to ask is, what do you really want? Because what to do is based on the outcome you're after. If you want to stay in office, do nothing because the Senate's not going to impeach you. Easy for me to say. I'm not the president under pressure, but you know as well as I do they're not going to impeach you. I said, so you can do nothing. If you want to be respected, then by the American people, by children, by parents, then I said, I know you're not going to put yourself, you're a lawyer, you're not going to put yourself in jail, but you got to communicate with more clarity about what's really going on and take responsibility for the things that were a mess up. And I had this moment where he said, you're so right. You're so right. So I'm so glad I called you. He said, I'll call you back. I'm going to call you back in 45 minutes. And I thought, holy shit, I influenced the president, move in the right direction, right? What I consider the right direction. And then his secretary called me about 30 minutes later. He's still in with the group, but he wants you to know he's focused on it. In about 3 hours, she called another time. And 4 hours later, he was standing with all the Democrats, you know, and they're saying, you know, this is all bullshit and we're going to fight this thing. But so I've had some wild rides. I've had a chance to sit down with Mr. Gorbachev, you know, right after, you know, he was taken out of office and spend time and bring him. I've had a ticket to history and it's been an incredible privilege and I've learned so much. And I try to take that and make it practical for the average person so they can improve their life or, you know, the leader that calls when it's time to intervene.
Just on the President Clinton front, you got to know Hillary Clinton well
yes,
as well.
I did, yeah.
Have you advised President Trump as well? Yeah, well, we'll get to that in a moment. But one of the things I thought about was Monica Lewinsky. I saw her not long ago in Los Angeles,
yes.
And I always felt that she had, I mean, I was going to say she got the short end of the stick, and then I just realized that's
maybe
not
a bad choice of metaphor.
I'm sorry.
Perhaps
that I was searching Alec Baldwin and Donald Trump for a better expression.
She was treated, unfairly,
she was treated so unfairly, and I, you know, and so villainized. And she was, you know, I have a daughter who's 21 years old, Tony,
yeah.
And I think about—
She fell in love with her boss.
She's a kid. She's a college girl.
Yeah.
And I felt like she made a mistake, but also taken advantage of in a very serious way. Did you ever think about her or reaching out to her?
Actually, I reach out all the time when somebody's there. Like, I reached out to Tiger Woods. Actually, probably a dozen people reached out for me to Tiger Woods. But he got in a mode where he's like, I don't want to help. And he didn't do it. So as far as her, I didn't reach out to her directly. But I always let people know that I'm available. And I work with people on both sides of the aisle. I'm an independent personally. I work with whoever I think is a great leader. But, you know, she's the kind of person, if you know her and want to invite her, I'm doing an event. I think she's based in L.A. now, isn't she?
Yes.
If she wants to come, I'm doing one for 10,000 people in 2 weeks. And she could come as our guest and it would blow her mind. I can promise you that. So if you want to invite her as my guest, we'll do it.
But it's interesting. You're a psychology expert. You're clearly really great at leadership coaching, but you never went to college. There's no formal training for this.
Yes.
You said you've learned from the people with whom you've had these discussions, but what do you think you offer? What is the value add when somebody's sitting across the table from you besides telling them the truth?
Well, I've spent 40 years now at this stage where I've gotten the call and I've got to produce the result now. Serena Williams is melting down on national television. What do I do? She's gone through all these problems. Turn around right now. You know, kid is suicidal. Knock on wood. I've never lost one suicide in 40 years out of thousands. So my whole approach has been, how do I just really deliver results for people in whatever area it is, whether it be sports or it be business? And, you know, I've been obsessed with finding principles that are the best principles from, like somebody's been together 25 years and they're still passionate for each other, not just hanging out. They're not lucky. They do things differently than other people. If you're fit and you've stayed fit for 30 years, you're not lucky. You're doing something different. If you're financially set and you've started with nothing and you built to that, you're not lucky. You did something different. So I codify what that difference is, but then I put it into a delivery system that's so enjoyable that you love while you're learning. And so as a result, you tend to really apply it because there's more emotion to it. You know, information without emotion is not retained. If I said, do you remember where you were on 9/11? Everybody in this country, in fact, most countries know where they were when they heard it. They can describe where they were, who was around them, what they saw. But I ask you where you were on 8/11, you have no clue because information without emotion is not retained. What I do is I put people in states, psychological, emotional states, where what they learn, they feel it, they embed it, they experience it, and they live it. And because they live it, they get results. And then that's grown my brand and reputation for 40 years.
You're also almost telepathic. You know, I watched the documentary, and when you have a huge crowd of people, you can almost, you do.
You can feel them.
You can zero in on the person who really seems to need your help. It's almost like the Long Island Medium. with shorter nails. How do you do that? How do you do that?
Well, I'm extremely empathetic. And if you know anything about the human brain, we have these things called mirror neurons. Whereas if you're sitting there and you watch somebody going rowing by and you keep watching them, your brain will actually start to do the rowing in your nervous system, right? And the more empathetic you are, the more your mirror neurons tend to turn on. So mine are highly developed for 40 years to enter someone's world rapidly, feel who they are. And then I have so many... You know, there's only so many patterns, right? There's only so many ways. We're the only creatures on earth that can make ourselves angry with one thought, happy with another, pissed off with another, excited with another. And so I've studied the system of how the brain works. And so there are not unlimited differences. And so I know what to do. There's only so many patterns, but I do it different every time because it's more enjoyable. It's like a piece of art. When somebody stands up, it's done. I know it's done. Now, let's just see how it shows up. And it'll be different every time.
Now, not to be a bitchy skeptic.
Go for it.
But, you know, I would say that most of the people who come to your seminars, Tony, are searching for something, are needing something, are unhappy in some way, shape, or form, right? And the one I was describing in the documentary was your six-day Date with Destiny seminar. You've had, you know, you do dozens of them. I mean, how many have you done?
I've done like 80 of them or 79 of them or something like that.
You know, through the course of your career. So isn't it safe to say that anybody in that audience is hurting?
Well, no, not necessarily. You'd be surprised. People come from two extremes. They come because they're the best in the world at what they do. I mean, Pitbull's not hurting, you know, and he's, you know, I'm constantly interacting and supporting what he's doing, right? Hugh Jackman is not hurting. Serena's not hurting. So it's finding what people need, and what people who come to see me are hungry. So you're right. Some are hungry because of pain. They had a birthday with a zero. They went through a divorce. Their kids have grown up. You know, they have been at the same business for 20 years. They made $300 million and they're bored out of their mind. They want something more, right? someone wants something more, they're going to come see me. But then there's the whole class of people, which is a huge chunk, which are the best in the world that are looking for, they know one little distinction. You know, I'm going this direction, I make a 10 degree shift, and you take that at a month from now, 6 months from now, you have a different destination, different destiny. So I get people that are hungry. If you're in the lukewarm middle where you're not happy, but you're not unhappy enough to do anything about it, you're never going to come see me. But if you're the best in the world, you'll talk to the other best and they'll say, Tony did this for me, and you'll call me. Or if you're the best or not the best, but you're really challenged, you're going to look for answers, and I'm going to be one of those people eventually, just because I've been in the culture doing this for 40 years. So
if Brian wanted to come, you are very expensive. If Brian wanted to come and have a one-on-one session, Brian, I'd like to talk to you about maybe getting together with Tony. I'm kidding.
I think he would help me.
Actually, I would like to get together with Tony, but he's too expensive and I'm too cheap.
Well, we should talk about this because some of your clients—
You charge $1 million and then and a percentage of whatever
they're upside in their business, yeah.
Jeez, Louise, no wonder you're feeding so many hungry people.
Well, you can only coach so many people one-on-one to give you a great— I used to do
How
seven.
How many people do you—
I used to do my Magnificent Seven, and then I stopped doing it because the demands are just so high, and I have to, you know, I want to over-deliver always, and I just not enough hours in the day. So now I do two, sometimes three at a time, max. But Paul Tudor's been one of my clients for, you know, 24 years. So
that's—
I like
$24
to work—
million.
Well, maybe it was more.
Well,
his fund—
I was
going to
say, in a piece
well.
Of the action.
But he's also made billions and billions of dollars. I mean, several times along the way, I've said to him, look, Paul, I said, we're such dear friends. I said, I don't need this for you anymore. I know what you're going to do, when you're going to do it. You knew it too. And he looks at me and says, are you kidding me? You're my insurance policy. Just knowing you're going to show up. I do all this stuff. You know?
I knew I should have dated him in college. Well, we're going to take a quick break. And when we come back, we're going to talk to you about leadership and our fearless leader. Or I don't know, is that the right way to describe Donald Trump these days? We'll hear from Tony Robbins about Donald Trump right after this.
Katie, when it comes to email marketing, there's so much more that goes into creating smart and effective campaigns than what meets the eye. And that's why Campaign Monitor created an easy-to-use email marketing platform complete with simple drag-and-drop email editor and award-winning 24/7 customer service.
Campaign Monitor gives you everything you need to run beautifully designed professional email marketing campaigns to grow your business with their gallery of beautiful professionally designed email templates, all of which look amazing on every device. You're bound to find something that will make your brand pop.
And since Campaign Monitor uses detailed lists and smart segments, your messages instantly drive more engagement, and that is the name of the game. No wonder it's used by more than 250,000 businesses worldwide, which is, as Katie said, a lot of businesses. And it's rated highest in customer satisfaction among major email marketing software vendors.
To start building smart and beautiful email newsletters today, try Campaign Monitor for free at campaignmonitor.com. Again, that's campaignmonitor.com. We're back with Tony Robbins, who has— I think you're the male Brenda Vaccaro. You've got such a raspy voice. Is it always so? Of course, a lot of our listeners won't remember Brenda Vaccaro. She did a Tampax commercial, and well, she was an actress.
Boy, I'm being compared to a Tampax commercial. I feel really—
But you have a
really
very raspy voice.
I think it's important to know the facts about tampons, to use them intelligently, and to know what you're doing. Let me tell you why I like Playtex best.
Yes, because I speak 50 hours at a time.
Is that why it's so raspy?
Yeah, I actually went to an expert at Harvard who's worked with Aerosmith and all these guys. He's probably the best expert in the country. I'll never forget. He asked me how often I speak, and I told him he thought I was making it up. He goes, no one speaks for 12 hours. No one will sit through 12 hours. I said, well, no, I get 10,000 people at a time to do it. So he then puts me under the scope, and he literally says, I got the thing down my throat, I can't speak. And he's like, no. He leaves the room with a thing in my throat. I'm trying to say something. He walks in with three doctors 5 minutes later, and they all stare, no. And I'm
what?
Like, that's when you know it's good, yeah.
Yeah, so finally they pull it out, and like, what's the no? And he goes, your vocal cords are supposed to be the thickness of your lips. Yours are thinner than this piece of paper. He said, there's no way you should be able to actually speak. It should be impossible for you to speak. But he said, you've done something that my 40 years as a medical doctor expert in this area would say is impossible. Science says impossible. You've wired your voice box, your false voice box, to your normal voice box. And that's how you speak. He goes, it's almost that you couldn't speak and you like willed yourself to speak and somehow the cells connected and gradually created this train that you now can speak. That's how I talk.
So do you ever not talk? I mean, do you ever go for quiet periods? She says, why aren't you talking to me? What's wrong? Yes. You're one of those.
What's the matter? You came home, you talk to everybody else. You're not talking to me.
Well, no. You probably get sick of it. I'm sure you want to just not, like, just
not talk. Well, there are times you certainly
want
to let your voice rest and so forth. No, I adore my wife. I tease her mercilessly. She teases me mercilessly. No, I like to speak when there's something to speak about. And when there's something to speak out, I'm not getting up there to talk for 50 hours because I want to talk for 50 hours because what I do is conditioning, right? You hear something once, you understand it. You hear it a couple times in different ways, you might be able to apply it. But if I get you where you're wired to do it, now you get results. I mean, you get results by changing conditioning. You don't get results by just getting a new insight.
This was your second wife, your current
wife. Yes, I was married for 14 years before that. I've been married 18 years on this one.
And so what did you learn from your first marriage that's helped you in your second?
How to pick your partner. No one tells you how to pick a partner. So she was a great lady, but we had so little in common. It was just chemistry. And then I fell in love with her children. She'd been married twice before me. I was her third husband. And she was 13 years my senior, 12 years my senior. So I was, if you can imagine, 24 and instantly had a 17-year-old son overnight, an 11-year-old.
Oh, that's weird. So you were like 7 years older than your stepson.
That's correct.
He was the Ashton Kutcher of his day.
he's 50 and I'm 57.
Wow.
Yeah, to give you an idea, right? So, mind-boggling. So I grew up very quickly, but I didn't want to lose the kids' love. I fell so in love with them. She's a good human being, but you know, she'd be upset all the time that I was stopping to talk to people or help people.
So how much older was she than you?
12 years.
12 years.
Yeah. So, but what the beauty is, I end up with all my kids, and my second youngest is my partner in several of my financial businesses, you know, and so it's a blast at this stage of my life that I got to experience all those stages simultaneously. They made me grow up, and they, I think, increased my ability to help other people, too.
Well, let's enough about your marriage. Let's talk about Donald Trump. Can we, Tony?
Speaking of things that weren't supposed to be possible, like your vocal cords, President Trump.
So how well do you know Donald Trump?
Pretty well, enough that he's called me at various times. I gave him his first
recently?
Big speech. No, not recently. I gave him his first big speech. I think he
can
might
be. Can you call him?
Well, sure I can, but he's just down the road from me. I can go visit him if I want to because I live in Palm Beach for most of the time, a good portion of the time. But, you know, he's a very unique creature, as you well know. And I think that he's been reinforced for what you and I might call bad behavior, at least in communication style. And he's now president of the United States, and those things are not being reinforced. But I think half the country sent him there because government is systemic. You take your time, you think everything through, it has consequences. He's pragmatic. I want to do this now, right now. And even if I make a mistake, then I'll correct the mistake and get it done, but I'm not going to take 2 years to do it. So I think—
Is that pragmatic or impulsive?
Well, you can call it impulsive, but it's also pragmatic to look for an answer now. Everyone has a specialty in their brain. Some people are extremely empathetic. Right? Empathetic people are always like, if you're in a meeting right now and we say we're going to do something, they're going, hey, wait a second, that'll make these people feel this way. And they're always worried about that. Person who's more pragmatic is like, they're going to feel that way. But if we don't do this, it's going to go under and everyone's going to get hurt. This is what we got to do right now. The systemic person's like, slow down. Let's think this through. Let's evaluate this. Let's take our time. And they might take a couple of years to do what the other person will do wrong in the first week. But the wrong one he does in the first week will get more done because they do it more often. And if they correct, they do it more often. Now, I don't know if he'll correct enough or not, but he clearly is not empathetic. Let's put it that way. That's not his highest skill set.
You think?
Yeah.
Well, the person in the last category, the president in the last category sounds like Barack Obama.
That's exactly right. Totally systemic. I mean, when you're talking to Barack Obama, he's thinking while he's talking. He's filtering every word. I watched him, you know, get up and give a speech to first graders, and he had two, what do you call it?
Teleprompters.
Teleprompters, reading teleprompters of first graders. Like, come on. But then you have this other guy who just makes shit up as he's standing there. So we've gone from one extreme to the other. It's what people do in relationship, right? This didn't work. Let me throw my pendulum to the other side, which also often doesn't work in some people's minds. But I think I had a good conversation with President Clinton last weekend, but I had an even better conversation related to this specifically a couple months ago with George W. Bush. And I was asking him, I said, you know, you've never attacked Barack Obama. I really respect that about you. And he goes, I'll tell you why, Tony. He goes, I'm not president of the United States. The people have spoken. I had my 8 years. And whether I voted for the person or not doesn't matter. They're my president. They're your president. We got to help them succeed. They don't do it on their own. And I said, but what do you feel? He goes, well, you know, I wanted my brother to win. He said he obviously didn't. But he goes, this stuff that the world's over because Trump is crazy and insane. He goes, it's so exaggerated and it's quite frankly infantile. He said, let's just be honest. He said, I used to think this too. When Nixon left office impeached, I thought he destroyed the presidency, destroyed the reputation of America, destroyed America. He goes, I was dead wrong. He said that was an infantile emotional response. Here's the truth. He said the office is bigger than the occupant.
Why are so many people so nervous, trepidatious, scared out of their mind?
Because we as a culture constantly reinforce fear and create tribalism. It's the new way in which we live since social media. Plus today, we can self-fulfill. You can just watch MSNBC all day long or Fox all day long and you live in a different universe. Or Facebook and read fake news. So people today don't want to be interrupted. I mean, in the financial industry, it's one of the biggest mistakes that people, it's called confirmation bias. You know, you go get everybody to confirm what you believe and you go do that. Well, it's a recipe for death. We're doing that here.
How do we change that? You know, I mean, this is something we've talked about frequently. And my friend Nicole says people looking for affirmation, not information. But there was a piece in the New York Times actually recently about how to get out of your bubble. And people are trying to encourage people to overlap. But I mean, what's the solution, Tony Robbins?
First, you got to see what the problem is. And I believe the problem, and you can tell me if you agree or disagree. One of the problems clearly is that we are not using technology. Technology is now using us. Watch where people's level of impatience is today. They're bam, bam, bam on their phone like this because it's not responding. It's going to a satellite. Give it a minute. I mean, my God, what the hell is the matter with you? And so you're used to in control every moment on the web. So I think it's a combination of technology and we have tolerated this as a culture. You get what you tolerate. As an individual, we tolerate it as a culture.
We tolerate it, but how do you change it?
The only way it's so far down line now, the only way it changes is the way anything changes historically. We throw our pendulums until we exhaust that. And sometimes that exhaustion goes for a period of, a generation, 10 or 15 or 20 years. If you think about the winter seasons historically, I mean, if you grew up in the 1930s and 40s, came of age at that time, you live very differently than you came of age in the 50s. Then if you came to the 60s and 70s, a totally different generation than the 80s, 90s, 2000s. So I personally believe, and I'm guessing, no one knows for sure, I think we're going to throw our pendulum and we're going to exhaust this like we exhaust anything and we'll eventually come back. How long will that take? I don't know. Will President Trump become a CEO who settles down and is able to do that or not? We're 6 weeks into it. He's been reinforced for the behavior he had his entire life, and he's only for the first time having an interruption to that behavior. So we'll see.
Well, regarding President Trump, you said Donald doesn't take coaching. He doesn't want coaching. I know a lot of Republicans who are really nervous, scared, even alarmed by some of the actions he's taken as president, the fact that he doesn't know what he doesn't know.
Has these tweet storms at, 5:30 in the morning, making all these accusations that have no merit because he's been reading Breitbart News. Come on.
And so I think the larger question is, can he learn from his mistakes and get bigger and better? Or
yes. He's a smarter person than you might give him credit for. He's well-trained to be the way he is because he's been rewarded so often. But without the rewards, he's got the ability to learn. The question is, will he? And I can't answer that question for you. No one can. But I think the more we spend time on his tweets and give it so much attention, you just reinforce the behavior. He's going to keep doing it. The more, put your fist up. If I go like this, what are you doing? Why are you pushing back? I didn't tell you to push back.
Well, otherwise you're going to break my arm. He's a very strong guy. People can't see this.
Let it go. You'll see it's not going to break your arm.
Okay.
The more moment you push on somebody,
the more Tony and Brian. I just
told him to put his fist out, and I pushed on it like with my fist, and he's pushing harder and harder. I didn't tell him to push back.
I'm sitting across from the table from Superman here, and it's very hard not to push back a little bit.
But think about that. Yeah. It's very hard for him not to push back, and very hard for the media not to push back.
But you're more optimistic than many people. You think that he can grow and get better, but you've said that he doesn't take training or coaching.
Well, at this stage, he's not, but it doesn't mean he won't. He's got 4 years, and we're all going to be with him 4 years, whether you like him or not. So do you really want to spend the rest of your life bitching, complaining, whining about somebody's style of communicating? We have three branches of government. They balance each other out. He's going to pass some things you don't like. That's called life. He's going to not pass some things he wants to that you might like. That's life. We're living in a world where there's so much whining. It's just like, how about where the issues are real, let's deal with them. But why not? Why has it got to be personal? It used to be in Congress, when Clinton was in office, guys would fight like hell on the floor and they'd go have a beer together. Now the problem is, if you talk to the other side, you're evil, you're immoral. This is absurd. This is childlike behavior.
But that's expanded to the nation as a whole.
That's what I'm saying. It's childlike behavior.
Right, but no, I mean, not just on Capitol Hill. And we often heard stories of Reagan and Tip O'Neill having a drink together in the Oval Office and fighting like hell in the halls of Congress. But what do you do about such a divided nation? I know this is the topic A on so many shows, and I think around so many dinner tables all over the country. But these two Americas that are so at each other's throats 24/7, how do we come together? I mean, I know it's not going to be kumbaya, but at the same time, how do we dissipate this anger and vitriol that's just pulsing through society today?
Well, it starts with the leaders, and the leaders of both parties.
Well, good luck with that.
That's what I'm saying. That's the challenge. But eventually, we burn out. Eventually, if you look at history, whatever it is, whether it be anger, you get tired of being angry. Sadness, you get tired of being sadness. I'm just saying, why don't we get tired of it now? Start to focus
I'm tired
on
of
things.
It.
Let's focus on what we can do instead of we can't. What's the secret to financial well-being? It's not predicting the future. The secret is taking control of what you can control. There's many things you can't, and it's time to surrender to that and focus on what you can do. Otherwise, everybody's just whining. And it's like, what is it doing? Is it making anything better? Is it changing it all? No, you're just getting the habit of being pissed off all the time or fearful all the time. And a decision made from fear or a decision made from anger is almost always the wrong decision.
If you were coaching President Trump today, what would you tell him?
Your communication style is getting in the way of your substance. There's actually substance to what he's doing in many cases that some people agree. I mean, if you were to say, look, in Syria, we cannot vet that these people are who they say they are. So in these cases, until we can vet, we're going to do this for them. It'd be a different case. But when you talk about Muslims as if it's a religion that's wrong, then the style of communication gets a hold of anything. And the second thing is calling people idiots or going on the internet at 3 a.m. and attacking everybody who has a different point of view makes it impossible to truly govern unless you are in control of everything. And
why do you think he does that?
Oh, we're spending so much time on him and why he does it. He does it because he's been conditioned to do it his whole life. He's a real estate guy that worked with very wealthy people. He figured a formula. He used debt. He maximized it and almost went bankrupt and then really scored on a large scale. And no matter what he said or did, he got reinforced, including with a TV show for 12 years. So he's been reinforced. Until new reinforcement happens, you won't see a change. That's how humans work.
I want to ask you about leadership, you know, because I think some Americans, I would say a lot of Americans, feel there's a real dearth of leadership in this country.
I would agree, unfortunately.
Why do you think it's so hard to find people that we trust and believe in and want to be in charge?
Well, think about it. Today, if you and I live in the world before the internet, and I'm not suggesting we go back, it would be the stupidest thing in the world.
Sometimes I'd like to.
Well, maybe in the moment. But if you really think about it, before then, if you want to attack me, you're going to pay a consequence. You say something about verbally, you do something, and it used to be in the media, then you'd be sued. Today, with the internet, we all want to be significant. There's only two ways to be significant. Take big risks and try to achieve things, and you could fail. And if you fail, you feel like you're worthless. Or tear everybody else down. Build the tallest building or tear everybody else down. Well, it's not hard to figure out what the majority of people do. There's no downside to tearing other people down on the web. There's no consequence. So our web behaviors and our technology conditioning has changed our culture to where we're no longer kind. I mean, obviously, there are plenty of kind people and there are kind communities. But if you asked, is the internet a kind place? The answer is, what would you say?
Absolutely not.
No.
Having said that, most of my friends would never, ever write the kind of garbage that comes my way. I don't know, Brian, if you get that.
Nobody cares enough.
But you know that comes the way of people who maybe disagree with them or who are public figures. So, yes,
But you also grew up in a different generation, right?
My daughters would never do that.
No,
Tony.
I agree with that. Brought up in a different generation, you have different values, right? Look at it. You're a race. So it's a value system. But right now, you can talk about values all you want, but then people look at this phone 150 times a day. That's the average. 150 times a day. It's your outdoor brain. And whenever people look in there, they're getting a dopamine hit sometimes. Oh, this
no,
cool new
are.
Thing.
They definitely are.
So they're wired to keep doing this. And guess what? Like any other addiction, they're here all the time. This is a world I can control. You don't like me? I'll unfriend you. I'll let you go. We have created a selfish society where it's all about me. And it's really not about me. It's about the way I can frame myself with filters and pictures. You know, you see people getting depressed, all the studies on Facebook now. And it's because they're not comparing their life to other people. They're comparing life to other people's fake lives, right? So I sound old talking about all this crap.
No, I agree with you. Well, I'm older than you are, yes, so that's why.
But this is very, I mean, what are practical things
that
people can do?
The practical things that we have to do is we've got to train people to enter a world where they live at their best and they're reinforced for it. I mean, look, let's be honest. All human beings have a 2-million-year-old brain, and that brain is not designed to make you happy. That brain is designed to make you survive. So it's a survival software. So what is it looking for? Anything that could hurt me. Well, there's not a saber-toothed tiger for you to fight or flight or freeze and hopefully not spot you. Now we place that with what are people thinking about me, as if it's life and death. Or do I have enough money? And let's be honest, in this country, if you are in poverty, and you know I care, I feed 100 million people a year. I don't want anybody in poverty. But if you're in poverty in the United States, you're not the 99%. That is the biggest bullshit on the planet. You're the 1% of the planet. 75% of the planet, 3/4 of the planet, lives on $2.50 a day, $900 a year. So we're living in a society where we've lost track. It's going to balance. Will it balance as fast as you and I want? No. My job is to educate people. I was there. I had 10,000 people in San Francisco and San Jose the day after the election. San Francisco. So you know what that was, right?
Big pro-Trump crowd.
That was
crowd.
A happy crowd.
Yeah,
they were depressed. And I went after them and I said, come on, grow up. What the hell are you doing? If you can't take disappointment and disappointment drives you into this place, how are you going to deal with your own life? You're focused on Trump because you're not mastering your own life.
But I think there are people who are upset about Trump for pretty selfless reasons, actually. People whose taxes are going to be cut by Trump, people who are personally going to benefit from Trump, have said, I don't like the example he sets for my children.
I agree 100%.
I don't like the cuts that he's going to make to programs that don't help.
Let's just agree on that. I agree on it. So what are you going to do about it?
Well, that's the right question.
But I mean, but
no,
but
no,
I
that's
think...
right. So answer my question. What are you going to do about it?
I don't have an answer to that question.
Continuing to complain about it isn't changing a thing. We can continue to make ourselves miserable if you like to continue for an hour.
No, I personally don't want to do that.
I'd rather do this. I'd rather say, arguing with reality is stupid. Sometimes reality does not reward what you want. So then what should you do? Focus on what you can do and what you can control, because otherwise you're just going to be upset all the time.
No, I agree. And I think that a lot of people, I don't know, sometimes I feel like I get too wrapped up in
this.
Well,
and I don't think it's whining for journalists to point out these important issues. And
I don't think it's whining for them to do that.
President
but to cry when their candidate didn't win?
No, that's terrible.
Come
on. That's very unprofessional. And journalists shouldn't be biased in that way. And I think we can all agree on that. Well, not all of them are.
Not
I would
all
argue
are,
that the journalist across the table from me is not.
I would argue, but
well,
are journalists today pure reporters as they once were? Is it pure journalism?
I think many of them are. I do. I think by and large, journalists tend to be more progressive and care about progressive issues more. I think
they're
generally,
certainly more socially
more
liberal.
They went to college
and they had a professor who was liberal, not conservative, because that's who goes and teaches. And so we keep fulfilling that aspect. Personally, I think, and I'm not for the agenda of President Trump, but I personally think it starts even at the colleges. We need to have more diversity in these colleges. When you look at Berkeley, which is supposed to be the home of free speech, and I don't even see it. I just saw the pictures today, but I remember that idiot from Breitbart. I can't think of his name. I don't support him. But to blow shit up, to create fires, to punch people in the face so that someone can't speak.
Yeah, I don't know how you call
from the exact group of people that supposedly started the free speech movement. Are you not embarrassed by that? I'm embarrassed.
I don't know how you call yourself a liberal and oppose the First Amendment and say I'm not going to even expose myself to ideas with which I disagree. But speaking of powerful ideas, before we let you go, how is that for an awkward segue?
Are we going to talk about my book?
We should talk about your book. That's what I'm trying to do.
We're talking about it. Well, how many books have you written, Tony?
What is this now? Five, I guess. Six, I guess.
Wow. God, you're a busy guy. So this one is Unshakable, Your Financial Freedom Playbook. And this is the result of all your conversations with all these financial experts.
Yeah. Well, not just experts, but every one of them was a self-made millionaire. And then I went Nobel Prize winner. I just brought in people of the best on earth. But the reason I wrote this book is I actually had, I do an annual event where I bring in, you know, six self-made billionaires, some of the best financial people in the world, and I have them work with my biggest donors, you know, for feeding people. And I, a year ago, I had the former Fed chair, Alan Greenspan, on, 19 years, most powerful man in finance, four presidents, right? I get to spend 5 hours with him, 3 hours picking his brain, which is what I do best. I dig in, find his psychology and his psyche and how things have shifted. And then 2 hours in front of the audience. And the last thing, we talked about negative interest rates. And, you know, I've never seen this in 5,000 years of banking history and what the feds are doing. And this really passionate conversation. So I said, okay, you're back made of the head Fed today. You're the chairman of the Fed again. What's the first thing you do? And the whole room leaned in to hear. And he paused and he paused and he leaned in and he went, resign. I would resign. So it's like when the Fed chair says he resigned, you know we're in trouble. So look, we're 8 years into this bull market. It's the second largest one in history. It doesn't take a genius to figure out there's going to be a crash. It's not negative. It's just a fact. It always has been. It's historic. But what I wanted to do was I wanted to free people of the fear and show them how to utilize this, both protect themselves and take advantage. Because if you're a baby boomer and you started too late, I know it's counterintuitive, but the next crash is your chance to leapfrog from where you are financially to where you want to be. If you're a millennial and you got all this, you know, debt, God forbid, from the, you know, the college education you got, and you think you'll never get out of it, the crash is the leveler. It's like if I told you your favorite car was, I don't know, the Ferrari, and you said to me, I want a Ferrari, and I said, I know a place you can get them 50% off, you'd be out of your mind. But when the stock market goes 50% off, people freak out.
People have the opposite instinct, which is to buy high and sell low.
And Warren Buffett's saying—
I was going to say Warren Buffett
yeah,
says—
what do you tell everybody during that time? This is the greatest opportunity of your life. Buy anything you can.
Be greedy when others are fearful and fearful when others are greedy.
You yeah. got it. Absolutely. So what people don't know, the reason they're not in the market, A, they think they have no money. And so I show them what to do and how to actually just take a small percentage and grow it because they just don't realize what compounding can do. You know, I give an example in the book of a young man based on a friend of mine's father convinced him at 19 that he's going to take $300 a month and save it, which sounds like a lot. But once you automate it, you don't even think about it. It just happens. You don't see it. And he did it just till he was 29, right? So 9 years. Total amount of money in was like 4,000 a year. So it's like $35,000. He left it in the market. And the market over the last 30 years has grown 10.25. But I showed you, even if it only grown at 8%, so even less, he ends up taking that $35,000, never putting another dime, and at 65, he's got just under $1 million. His bet, it doesn't take a lot of money to be wealthy. It takes time and consistency. His best friend gets the idea when he finishes to start at 29, and he invests $300 a month his entire life to 65, and he never catches up because it's time that gives you the advantage. You don't need a lot of money. How many great athletes, how many great movie stars, actresses, actors have you seen that made more money than God, and now they're totally broke? I mean, you look at 50 Cent, you know, he got a $100 million tip on vitamin water. He made, I think it was $400 million, if I remember correctly, and he's bankrupt. He bought Tyson's home and Tyson went bankrupt, who made $500 million. Right now, I don't know if it's true, but I read the other day that, what's Pirates of the Caribbean, Johnny Depp. He made $750 million, $750 million, and they're talking about him going bankrupt right now because he spent $30,000 a month on wine and he spent $3 million to take Hunter Thompson, burn his body, and blow it in a cannon into space.
You know, it's hard to live a nice lifestyle on $750 million. I mean, you got to economize.
Unless you make money your slave, you're the slave to money. And unless you learn how to make money while you're asleep, it's not going to happen. And every American can do it, and it's not a full-time job. It requires you to get in the game, but you got to know what the rules are so you don't get taken advantage of. Because truthfully, the level of deceit that happens in this industry is greater than almost any industry in the world because there just isn't transparency. And people use language that makes people feel like they don't know what they're doing. And so they just give up, and then they beat you to death with fees you don't even know you're paying.
So this book is really for everyone, not for wealthy people. It's
anybody. No, this is a book designed to show you how you can leapfrog from where you are, where you want to be, and to make sure, A, you're protected during the next time, but more importantly, that you take advantage of what the next time will provide for you. I mean, I'll give you an example. Why are people afraid to get in the market? It's going to crash. Well, every day you hear we broke another record. You hear the Dow's up another one. Well, if you look over the history of the stock market, on average, we have a new record once a month. Now, sometimes that happens 7 in a week, but that's the average that we've had over time. But here's what's really interesting. Every year we have a correction. It's like if you're going to be stressed, and you're 40 years old and you're going to live to 85, you're going to have 45 more corrections to go through. You're going to be stressed the rest of your freaking life. Remember last January, the worst January in history? $2.2 trillion melted down. But where did we end up the year? Record-breaking. 80% of those corrections, and a correction for those listening is anytime you drop more than 10% up to 20 from where the peak was, that's called a correction. 80% of them don't become a crash. They don't become that meltdown that everybody's afraid of at the deepest level. And so you literally, you see 14% dropout and it bounces right back unless you sell. I always tell people the market never took a dime from anyone. You did. Now watch this. What about those big bear markets? They last a year on average. They cost us an average of 33% if you sell. If you don't sell, it didn't cost you anything. And here's what people have to know. Every single bear market, every crash in the history of the United States for two centuries plus has been followed by a bull market that goes crazy. If you remember 2008, we lost, you know, from peak to trough, briefly 50%. It was really around 35% for most people. But we made 69% starting on March 9th, coming up a few days from now is the anniversary, with the next 12 months. I can show that to you every time in history of the United States. That's why Warren Buffett says you don't want to bet against the United States. The last two centuries, the dumbest bet you could possibly make. You want to be in the market, not sell. And when the market crashes, you want to buy things for a discount.
Well, and your message, which is a very powerful one and one that I think a lot of people need to hear, is you can't market time. You brought to bear a great stat in the book about how most of your gains happen during these days.
Yes.
I forget, it's like a dozen days
the
course of a year.
You hit the hot button. Check this out. So people are trying to time the market. Oh my God, the market's too high. How long have you been hearing that for? 8 years. The market's gone up 250%. How have we heard that since Trump got in office? We're up 11, 12% right now in 2.5 months. The Trump bump. But is it going to correct? Of course it's going to correct. It's going to happen. But here's what you got to know. Warren Buffett said to me, Tony, those guys on CNBC, those market forecasters, they're only there, he said, to make fortune tellers look good because no one can predict the market. But here's what you can predict. There was a study done over the last 20 years by both J.P. Morgan and by Charles Schwab. They did it independently. What they found is over 30 years, we've done 10.28%, which is amazing. Over the last 20 years, we've done 8.2%. But if you missed just 10 of the best trading days in 20 years, now what are your chances of knowing which days those are going to be? So you're out because you think things are overvalued, whatever the case may be. You're scared. If you miss the top 10 trading days, that's all in 20 years. You move from having an 8% return where you're doubling your money every 9 years and get wealthy doing that. It drops down to 4.5%, almost in half. If you miss the top 20 days, you only make 2%. You might as well have been in bonds. And if you miss the top 30 days, 1.5 days for 20 years, that's all, 1.5 days each year for 20 years, you lose money. See, the most dangerous thing is not getting in the market. You gotta be in the market because it's given the highest rates of return for the last two centuries. It has the most volatility, which is why you have to have diversification like I show you. But it is the opportunity of your lifetime to be in there and be unlike other people and be unshakable.
All right, before we go, I feel like watching Tony, he's got so much energy. Do you drink a lot of coffee?
I don't drink any coffee whatsoever.
I'm like, I'll
Can you
have
imagine
what
me on
having.
Coffee? It would be scary.
Really? No. So, but you do have some kind of funky personal routine.
Funky.
You jump into this cold pool every morning when you're at one of your homes,
yes.
Plural. That's 57 degrees, the water?
Yeah, 57, 56.
What up with that?
it stimulates. It's done all over the world, but especially in the northern countries. To go hot cold stimulates the lymph system, the blood flow, it cleans your system out. But I also do it for another reason, which is, you know, most people don't do what they need to do. They know what they should do, but they don't do it. You know, they know what to do, but they don't do what they know, right? So what I did early on is I said, I want to train my brain that when I say we're doing this, I'm not negotiating with myself. Well, I'll do it tomorrow. So I get in every day for one reason, to teach my brain when I say we do it, we do it. And now it does. If I want to go make the run, I want to do the business thing, there's no hesitancy in me. There's no negotiation within myself. And that has enormous power if you want to build things and create things and have an impact with people.
You also do breathing exercises?
I do. I start every day with my first 10 minutes is a form of meditation, sort of, meditation-like. Here's what I do. I do a radical change in my body because changing your breathing changes the way the brain works. If you study, you know, yoga or various esoteric sciences, the breath is like the string on a kite. The kite is your brain. If you change the breath, you change how the brain becomes engaged. So I do this radical explosive breathing. I do 3 sets of 30, and that changes my state.
Can I hear what radical explosive breathing sounds like?
a little louder than that, harder than that. And I do 30 of them, right? I do 30 pause, 30 pause, 30 pause. Then I spend 10 minutes and I do 3 minutes where all I focus on are three things I'm grateful for. Now, why? That sounds mamby-pamby, gratitude, who cares? The two emotions that screw us up, and you see them in our society right now, are anger and fear. They'll screw up your business. They'll screw up your intimate relationship. They'll screw up your health. And their antidote is gratitude. You can't be grateful and angry simultaneously. It's impossible. So if you cultivate that gratitude, there's no anger there. You can't be fearful and grateful simultaneously. So by taking 3 minutes to start every day and bringing that up in my nervous system with real stuff, not positive thinking, I'm so happy and making it up, a bunch of affirmations, I think about real situations and I make one really simple, like the wind on my face, my child's smile, because if you only train yourself to respond to big things, then you don't enjoy life. It's kind of like the astronauts that went to the moon, came back. What do you do when you're 35? You went to the moon, you shook the president's hand, you tabletop, you know, the ticker tape parade. What the hell do you do now? And most of them got addicted to drugs and alcohol because they found adventure only in a smile. They didn't find it in going to the moon versus a smile. So I do 3 minutes and I focus on it and I feel it like I'm there and it makes my nervous system go. Then I do 3 minutes of prayer and kind of blessings, if you would, to my children, my family, my coworkers, my associates, and people I meet on the street. And then my last 3 minutes.
Will you put us in there tomorrow?
I promise I will. but then my last 3 minutes is kind of my three to five to thrive. I think of three things that I really want to accomplish that matter to me, and I see it and feel it is done and kind of celebrate it. And what that does is it sets up your brain where you're grateful instead of reactionary. You're loving to the people around you and yourself, on the blessing side, and you're clear on what it is you really want to make happen, and you're certain it's going to happen. And it takes 10 minutes. And honestly, I'll usually go 15 or 20 because it feels so good, but there's no excuse not to do it because, you know, if you don't have 10 minutes, you don't got a life. And so that's what I do. That and my jumping in that freezing water are my two
little
beginnings.
And you jump on a trampoline too, we should add.
Yeah, no, I lymphocyte. I use a rebounder.
Lymphocyte.
Yeah, it moves your lymph. The lymph, you know, the heart, the blood is moved by the heart, but the lymph has very little that can move it around other than explosive breath, strong breathing, and movement, exercise. So the lymph is critical. It's the detoxification system of your body. So bouncing on a rebounder allows you to move the lymph, but it doesn't, when you hit the ground, you don't have the impact. That's part of the battle.
I don't know about you, Brian, but I'm going to do those three things tomorrow. And I don't have a trampoline, but see
you're
if they help.
You're going to plunge into a 57-degree pool.
Oh, I'm not going to do that either. But I am
so what are you
going to
do? Think about people you're grateful for?
I'm going to do the gratitude thing, which my husband says I should do more.
Uh-huh. So you're going to do kind of the wimpy version of his routine?
Yes, I am. And the prayers.
Uh-huh, that's nice.
And then the intentions.
Yeah, the three things you're committed to. Right. But seeing it as done, feeling it as done. It's really simplistic. But when you do it every day, it
reinforces that behavior.
Well, you also just got to think about, we all do what we've trained our nervous system to do. If you bitch all the time, you're going to bitch all the time. If you're grateful all the time, you're grateful all the time. We all know people that are funny no matter what happens, right? You know, how do they do it? They've wired themselves to do it. So why not wire yourself for higher emotional states that'll affect your family and your businesses and your coworkers and associates, as opposed to just showing up and hoping you feel good with an environment that if you turn on anything, if this thing's following you, you're probably going to be unhappy because all I got to do is open this up and there'll be 20 things about Trump and 20 things about
the
Democrats.
Let the record show he is holding his iPhone. I feel like if I do 10% of what Tony Robbins does, I will be a hugely successful person.
That's for damn sure. I mean, you're amazing, really.
You guys are sweet. No, we all have our gifts, and I'm just clear what my mission is. And I think you're clear about yours, and I don't know you well enough to know, but it sounds like you found a partner here.
Still figuring it out.
No, probably. Brian is clear as well.
That's wonderful.
All right. Well, thank you so much for taking the time to talk to us.
I hope people pick up the book because we're going to feed another 100 million people. That every book will feed 50 people.
So all the profits are going to
every
these charities.
Penny. Yeah. Last time we sold 1 million copies in hardback of Money Master the Game, so we fed 50 million people. But I'm donating it regardless, even if you don't buy the book. But
get the book for yourself. If people are interested in learning more about your charity and what you do to feed people all over the globe, how do they do that?
They can go to feedingamerica.org, and you can look up the Tony Robbins, it's 100 million more, they call it, because every year we do another 100 million. It's a billion-person challenge, basically. Or you can go to my website at tonyrobbins.com.
So fun to have you, Tony.
Thanks.
Thank you so much.
So nice to see you again.
Well, listeners, that does it for our little summer break. Our episodes from the vaults. Next week, we'll be back with a fresh podcast hot off the presses.
Thanks to our producer, Gianna Palmer, our assistant producer, Nora Ritchie, Jared O'Connell, who mixes and engineers the show, and a big thank you to my assistant, Beth DeMoss, for all she does to keep
my life and your life as well, Brian, together.
We all love Beth. Mark Phillips wrote our theme music. Katie Couric and I are the show's executive producers.
Remember, the lines are open over at comments@couricpodcast.com. We'd love to hear your questions, feedback, guest ideas, or whatever else might be on your mind, or leave us a voicemail at 929-224-4637. I'm on social media in all the usual places, most often Instagram. Just search Katie Couric.
And I tweet over at Goldsmith B. And folks, if you like our show, please rate and review us on Apple Podcasts. Don't forget to subscribe as well. It helps more people find out about our show.
Thanks so much for listening, as always. And we'll talk to you next week. Bye.
Katie, when it comes to email marketing, there's so much more that goes into creating smart and effective campaigns than what meets the eye. That's why Campaign Monitor created an easy-to-use email marketing platform, complete with mobile-friendly templates, a simple drag-and-drop email editor, and award-winning 24/7 customer service, and that's always really important. No wonder it's used by more than 250,000 businesses worldwide.
That's a lot of businesses. So to start building smart and beautiful email newsletters today, try Campaign Monitor for free at campaignmonitor.com. Again, that's campaignmonitor.com.
Stitcher.
Hello, deadbeats. It's Gabby. Gabby Dunn, host of Bad With Money. I had the Bad With Money book come out in January. I'm super stoked for season 4. This season, we're going back to our roots, and I'm having long conversations with amazing people and getting the big picture about money and the economy. Do you like intersectional, queer, social justice-based money podcasts? This is the only one, so get into it.
Did you earn it? Do you deserve to be like a billionaire when somebody who's working as a janitor or working in Walmart or a teacher who may be working just as many hours as you, maybe just as smart as you, like, does that make it okay that you have so much?
I get paid once a month, so my checking account's huge. It's like a tidal wave comes in, and then on the second, it's empty again.
Oh my God, just speaking my language. Bad With Money is back now for season 4. Listen in Stitcher, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.